That's good.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I think I know most people. It's my name, Michael Honig. Nice to meet you. Grew up here in Teaneck, New Jersey. And I'm now currently a Rebbe at TABC. Taught Mark's sons. A big schluss. This is Dovi. I know he looks a little older. He's part of TABC also. Believe it or not. Childhood best friend, so we got a whole range here tonight. The goal of this year on Thursday night is to Mirat Hashem get chizuk, some strength, some isorus from the parsha. There's so much precious gems and energy and excitement, and the goal is just to come alive. The Torah's chaim, it's a living Torah. Not an ancient, archaic text, but when we read the Parsha, how does it speak to me today? If I need to be louder, let me know. Let's begin. Please imagine the following case. Anybody here work in Midtown? Some people work in Midtown, great. You're in the middle of a work day, beginning of the day. You're walking through the streets, and you identify a construction site. And you notice the construction workers are just sitting there, lying around. Having a good time. The tools all spread out all over the place. The workers playing some cards on their phones, completely slacking off. Can you imagine in that moment of righteousness, you would say to them, "Hey, what are you doing? Get back to work." You don't know them. Imagine telling these big, buff, jack guys, "Get back to work, you lazy bum. It's not time for a break. Why are the tools all over the place? Why are you playing cards?" So if you would dare be so bold to make such a statement, at the minimum you'd receive verbal assault, but more likely some bruises along the way. No one would dare, that'd be crazy. But yet we find the exact same thing happened in this week's Parsha. Same thing happened. Yaakov Avinu is a fugitive now, he had to run away from his brother who wants his head. He arrives at Charan and he notices a group of shepherds just sitting there. And what does he say, source number one? Vayomer. Hein oda yom ha-gadol. The day's still long. Lo eitei ha-seif ha-mikneh. What are you doing? It's not time to bring any of the animals in. Hashku ha-tzonu l'churu. Water the flock and go on grazing. He yells at them. What are you doing here? Get back to work. Again, he doesn't know them. And what we expect, like our case, they would attack him. They would rebuke him. Who are you? Leave me alone. Start punching him. But what do they do? They start to justify themselves, excuse themselves. Pasuk Chet. V'vayomru. Lo nuchal ad asher yatzvu kol adarim. We can't do anything until all the flocks have been gathered. The galu at Evan may al pi aver. And we can remove the stone from the mouth of the well. V'ishkino atzon. And then we can order the flock. They start, you know, tensing up. Start saying, "I'm sorry. Sorry, sir. You know, we really have an excuse here. We can't really move the rock. Everybody has to come. Then we'll get back to work." How does Yaakov Avinu get away with such a thing? How does he get away with this? He doesn't know them. These are shepherds. How does he do it? The great Panovich Arav says something so beautiful. Before this, at the beginning of the incident, what does he say? A key word. Achai. My brothers. That's how he addresses them. My brothers. Had he initially rebuked them and accosted them, true, he probably would have slapped them around, been insulted, would have been irritated, would not have listened to him. But since he said my brothers, he demonstrated a love, an affection, a care towards them. Now they were ready, willing to accept the rebuke. They felt his love, and as a result, they were willing to listen. That's how, says the Panovich Rav, Yaakov Avinu was able to rebuke these strangers. And the Emes Liakov, written by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the great Rosh Yeshiva, the giant of the 20th century, he expounds on this idea. He asks the same question, similar question. Why is Yaakov calling them Achai, my brothers? He doesn't know them. They're strangers. Who is he calling these new people Achai, my brothers? What's going on? Says Rabbi Yaakov, the answer can be found in source number two. The Gemara Erechin. We have a mitzvah of tochacha, to rebuke. We have a mitzvah. Somebody's doing something incorrectly, we have to rebuke them. But there's a limit to this mitzvah. Says the Gemara in Erechin, Ad Heichan Tochacha. How far does Tochacha extend? When is the mitzvah no longer applicable? When does it no longer apply? Rav Amar, welcome. Rav Amar, Ad Haka. Once a guy starts smacking you, that's it. No longer a mitzvah anymore. B'Shmuel Amar Ad Klala. Shmuel says until he starts cursing you. Rav Yochanan Amar Ad Nazifa. Until he starts protesting and getting angry. Rav Yaakov asks, what does it matter? Just because the guy is cursing you or hitting you, you don't have a mitzvah anymore? It's a mitzvah in the Torah. Mitzvah says in the Torah, Ochiach tochiach tamitacha, rebuke your fellow. So just because he starts protesting, aklolas chinam, he starts cursing you, it's over, the mitzvah? I'm commanded to do it. Says Rav Yaakov, we have to look at the Rambam in source number 3. A very beautiful Rambam from the Hilchos Deos. Perek Vav Halacha Zayin. Haroach Haveru Shechata, O Shalach B'derech Lo Tova. You see your friend, he's sinning, he's not going on the proper path. Mitzvah lachzir lemutav. It's a commandment to bring him back. V'lodiyo shehuchote el atmo b'masav arayim. You have to inform him, he's sinning. He's hurting himself with these improper actions. Shenamar, because the Pasuk tells us, hochiach tochiach tamitacha. Somebody's going in the wrong path. We can't stand idly by. No, live and let live. We need to do something about it. Hamochiach techaver ben devarim shebeino lebeino. Second line, whether you're rebuking the person between matters between he and his friend, ben dvarim shebeino lebein makom, or whether between matters between the person and Hashem, sarik lochicho beino lebein atzmo. Number one, it has to be in a private setting. They don't start doing it in a public audience. The idab lo benachas ubeloshon raka. You have to do it calmly. You have to do it in a soft voice. And the key line, V'yodiyu she'eno merlo ela tovaso. It's over here. And you have to inform him that it's for his benefit. For his benefit. Lavi l'chayelam haba. To bring him to the next world. He has to know, why are you rebuking him? It's for his benefit. You're looking out for his best interests. To bring him to the next world. In kiba mimena mutav. If he accepts, beautiful. Gvaldik. V'im lav. Yochichenu pam shnia v'shlishis. If not, you go a second time, a third time. V'chein tamid chayv adam lochicho ad sheyakeru hachote v'yomer lo enu shomea. And you have to keep doing it until the person hits you and says he's not listening. Says Rav Yaakov, what do we see from the Rambam? What's the whole basis of the mitzvah of tochicho, of rebuke? The person needs to know that you're doing it for his benefit. He needs to know that it's out of the greatest display of love and affection and care. You want to bring him to the next world. He needs to know how much you care about him. He needs to feel it in every fiber of his being. The moment he starts whacking you over the head, protesting and smacking you, it's abundantly clear he doesn't feel that way. It's abundantly clear he hates your guts and wants to punch you in the face. At that moment, the mitzvah of tochacha is suspended. It no longer applies, because this Jew doesn't feel that love. He doesn't feel you have his best interest in mind, because he's smacking you. He hates you. Tochacha doesn't apply anymore. Very powerful. And says Rav Yaakov to her original question, why does Yaakov Avinu, why does he say achai to strangers? Because he was about to rebuke them for just sitting out, slacking off. But before he rebuked them, what did he do? He needed to establish a camaraderie, a friendship, a love. He needed to establish, I care about you. You're my brother. And he meant it. Then and only then was he able to offer rebuke about the shepherd slacking off. The achai demonstrated, I care. I love you. You're my brother. And it's real, it's sincere, it's genuine. Then and only then was he able to offer the tochacha to the shepherds, which they did in fact receive and respond with very nicely. Achai, whenever we approach anybody, whenever we rebuke anybody, it needs to be only through achai, through a brotherhood, through a love, through a true care. The person has to know it's for their best benefit. They have to know we have their best interests in mind, and we love them and care about them sincerely with every fiber of our being. And says Rav Yaakov, without that love, we can't rebuke. It's forbidden to rebuke. There's a great story of the Panovitcher Rav with this great vort. He was also famous. There's another story of him. He's famous when he visited the Arch of Titus, got out of the car, started saying, we won, we won. He was a tremendous visionary, a tremendous giant, built a beautiful yeshiva. We have Noller here. His family comes from that royal line of the Panovich. And great story, the Panovich Aruch. He once was in America on a fundraising trip. And he was granted an audience with a very wealthy businessman. And this businessman was very wealthy, very busy, and they told him 15 minutes. That's it. From 3 to 3:15. That's your slot. Under the water. Memories from Shear. 3 to 3:15. 3 to 3:15. That's it. So to give himself ample warning and preparation, he told the driver, pick me up very early. We can't miss this appointment. It's crucial that we're there on time. Like any good Misa, they get lost. They get stuck in traffic. And it's getting closer and closer to 3 o'clock. 2:40, 2:45, 2:50. Driver's sweating. The deadline's getting close. 15 minutes. This is the chance. Pull in 2 to 3. Unbelievable. No spots. Classic. No spot hero. No spots. They're getting so nervous. They finally see an open spot, but of course, what does it say? Reserved for president. Right in front of the building. The Rav says to the driver, please park in there. Driver says, but Rav, that's the person we're meeting with. That's the person we're supposed to meet. That's his spot. He's the president. Rav says, park in that spot. Left with no choice, parks in that spot. Whiz into the elevator, get into the office at 3 o'clock. The Panovich Rav starts giving a beautiful pitch for the yeshiva, displaying all the wonderful things happening, the great the yeshiva is, we need it, etc., etc., a beautiful place. All of a sudden, one of the wealthy man's aides bursts in, fire in his eyes, ready to go for it. He says, did you know that those rabbis parked in your spot? Yup, them two right there. How dare they? With the ultimate self of kissing up and Chanifa. Those rabbis, how are they be so pompous, so rude, so bold? And he goes on this whole tirade explaining that these rabbis took the spot, trying to gain favor in the big boss's eyes. I can't believe it. The driver was mortified, face beat red, didn't know what to do. He was waiting for this gazillionaire boss to explode, kick them out, rip up the check, send them packing. The Panovich Rav was very, very quiet, and he responded calmly. And I have this story from Rabbi Fran Safer. Reserved? What does reserved mean? Nothing is reserved for anyone in this world. All that we have here is a gift from God. If we need it, we should use it. If not, we should find a way to serve God with it. If God grants someone wealth, the Rav continued, it's a gift. He should use whatever he needs and give the rest away to good causes. If he holds on to it, he can't take it with him when he dies. His children might inherit the wealth, but they may not. God might decide the person was an irresponsible guardian, and he may pass the money on to someone who will do a better job of distributing it. I'm sorry, sir. Nothing we have is reserved for us. Silence. Silence. That aide was speechless. Looks at the boss like any good show. What's he going to say? The boss had a very wide smile, warm smile, reached into the checkbook, wrote a very generous check, handed it to the Panovich Rav, where in response, the Panovich Rav gave his legendary kiss on the cheek, and they left the office. Says Rabbi Frand, how did he get away with this? How did he get away with this? He parks in the boss's spot, gives a muster schmooze about giving money and prioritizing, and he writes a generous check. Says Rabbi Frand, because the Panovich Rav was a gadol. He really loved every Jew. He really loved every Jew. He displayed tremendous avas Yisrael. So when he was in that office, even if he didn't use the word achai, his body language, his tone, his demeanor was saying achai, my brother, my brother. And the boss felt it, because you can't fake it. He felt it. He felt his love and was willing to accept this passionate speech and donate very generously. That was the power of the Panovich Rav, the power of achai. We now transition to Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Chet. This is the famous showdown on Har Carmel, story of Eliyahu. We go to Achav and Izabel, Jezebel, the king and queen, who introduced tremendous spiritual corruption into the nation, introduced mass idolatry, very wicked people. Eliyahu had enough. He had enough. The people were slipping, the people were declining, he had enough. He was end. It was over. Enough is enough. And he said, Pasuk Yitet, source number 4, Pasuk Yitet, V'yata, Shlach Kevot Eli Kol Yisrael Har Carmel. Bring the nation to Har Carmel. The Nevi Baal 450, Unevi Asher 400 Ochlei Shulchan Izevel, and the Nevi Asher 400 men. Bring all your false prophets and bring Kla Yisrael. Pasuk Chav. By Shlach Achad B'chol Bnei Yisrael, by Kol Tanavim El Har Carmel. Turn the page. Make sure you're with me. So he brought them all to Har Carmel. Bring the Jews to Har Carmel and the prophets. Vaygash Eliyahu, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, El Kolam Vayomer, Ad Matai Atem Poschim Al Shtei HaSeifim. How long are you going to vacillate, dance between two positions? A very famous line for us today. Think about it. How long are you going to continue this dance? Im Hashem Elohim, L'chu Acharav. If Hashem is true, go with him. Im Abal, L'chu Acharav. If the idol is true, go with him. Stop going back and forth. Stop being inconsistent. Stop your hypocritical ways. V'lo anu ha'am oto davar. The nation doesn't say anything. Nobody responds. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. V'inu lanu shnayim parim v'yivcharu lehem apar echad. So he says, let's make a deal. There's going to be two bulls. Your team, the false prophets, Nevi'e Baal, you pick one bull. Put it on the wood, set it up, but don't put any fire. And I'll do the same thing. I'm going to establish my bull, put it on the wood. I'm not going to put any fire either. So we're both going to choose a bull. Your team, Team A, you have your bull over here, no fire. I'm going to put my bull over here, no fire. Chafdal. I'm going to call out in the name of Hashem. You call out, sorry, in the name of your gods. I'll call out in the name of my God. Whoever responds with fire, this will determine who's the true God. Who's the true God? We both have these bulls set up. Whoever is able to produce a fire, a flame, that will determine who's real. Unbelievable. Imagine being there. It's probably incredible. Vayan, that's a real spectator event. Vayan, Karam, Vayamru, Tova, Devar. Everybody's excited. Wow. Now we can see. Whoever produces the heavenly fire, that's taking the cake. That's taking the prize. And as the psukim go on, the Nevi'e Baal, they prepare their bull. They're all excited. They're praying, and they're praying, and they're praying to no avail. And they start cutting themselves, and blood spurting out. Probably a very intense scene, graphic scene. To no avail. And it's hour after hour. And Eliyahu starts mocking them, a little trash talking. Oh, maybe he's sleeping, your God. Maybe he's relieving himself. Maybe he's on leave. Mocking them, ridiculing them, nothing doing. Then Eliyahu prepares his. And to add a little oomph, a little cherry on the top, he makes sure a lot of water goes on his korban to magnify the miracle. Splash, one time, two times, four times, splashes it with water. So that it's very obvious, making it non-flammable. He splashes it all with water. What happens? Lamed Vav. Vayi balota mincha, vaygash Eliyahu Navi, and he approaches. Vayamar Hashem alei Avram Yitzchak v'Yisrael hayomi vada ki ata elohim b'Yisrael. Today, let it be known that you're the true God. Lamed Zayin. Aneni Hashem aneni. Answer me, Hashem. Answer me. Veidu am ki hazeh ki ata Hashem elohim. Let the people know you're the true God. And you should turn the hearts back. And what happens? Pasuk lamed chet. Vatipolesh Hashem batochal tola. Vetaitzim, vetavanim. A fire comes down and consumes whose? Eliyahu's korban. And the wood and the stones and the earth. And it licks up all the water in the trenches. Lamed tet. Vayukalam vayplu panim. And all the nation sees and they fall on their faces. Vayamru Hashem hu Elohim. Hashem hu Elohim. This is where it comes from. On the Elah, the most intense part, where we declare with tremendous faith and conviction, Hashem Elohim comes from this incident. And everybody's so excited. Mem, Whoa, don't let those guys get away. Right, the ones on the other side probably started creeping away, backpedaling very slowly, trying to be inconspicuous. Ish ayimalei mehem. Don't let any of them escape. He brings them down to Nachal Kishon and he slaughters them. He wipes them out, complete decimation. That's the end of the story. Probably tremendous excitement in the air. What happens? Izebel, the queen, finds out about this and she says, "You're a dead man. Those were my prophets. Those were my people." She wants him dead. So now he has to run away. He comes to Harfor Rave. He comes to a cave. Source 5. Vayo Perek Yutet Pasigirav. Vayomer. Say Mamanata Bahar Lifnei Hashem. Hashem says, "Get out of the cave. Get out of the cave." Vinei Hashem over. Hashem passes by. V'ruach gudula v'chazak mefarei karim m'shaber tzalim lifnei Hashem. A great wind comes forward, breaking mountains, smashing rocks. And what happens? Lo beruach Hashem. Hashem's not in the wind, he's told. V'achar ruach rash. After the wind, what comes? An earthquake. Lo v'rash Hashem. Hashem's not in the earthquake. Pasuk Yibet. V'achar rash esh. After the earthquake, fire. Lo v'esh Hashem. Hashem's not in the fire. So he sees this windstorm and this earthquake and this fire. And after each time, Hashem's not found in the wind, in the earthquake, in the fire. V'achar esh kol d'dama daka. A still, thin voice. A still, calm, thin voice. Source 6. An unbelievable Malbim. So precious. So beautiful. It says, "What's going on? What is this imagery that Eliyahu is witnessing? What's he seeing? Wind? Hashem's not in the wind. Earthquake? Hashem's not in the earthquake. Fire? Hashem's not in the fire." And then he sees a still, thin voice. What's going on here? What's happening? Says the Malbim, Source 6. Ulam kifia nigla hiralo kibamachane ruach varash ve'esh en Hashem bam. In a camp of winds, earthquake, and fire, that's not where you're going to find Hashem. Rak b'kol demama. Where do you find God? Where do you find godliness? Where do you find the real source? In a still, thin voice. Umimenu yilamdu shluchav u'neviyav. And what was Eliyahu taught for all time? Bal Yisaru Tsar, Bal Yirashu Rash, Bal Yaviru Esh. Don't make fires. Don't make earthquakes. Don't make windstorms with people. Kamosha Asa Eliyahu Bikinaso La Hashem Sivakot. Like Eliyahu had done. Shatzar to Shemayim. Vishachat and Nevi'e Baal. Eliyahu, you took it too far. You were mad at the people. You caused drought. He caused a drought. He stopped the rain. You slaughtered the Nevi'e Baal. It was a rebuke to Eliyahu, talking about a rebuke from Hashem. That's not the way to approach them, with fire and wind and slam them and smack them around. That was improper, Eliyahu. That's not the right way to do it. Don't come and fire to the people. Ki Hashem yishlach neviyav sheyavo aleihem b'kol demama. How does Hashem want his messengers, his leaders, to approach the people? With a still, thin voice. With a calmness, with a love. The Yimashku et ha'am b'avotot ava. How do you bring the nation close? With ropes, with cords of love. That's how you bring the Yidden close. Not by causing droughts and shechting and slaughtering and going crazy. Through love. Uvidvarim rakim. Soft voices. Soft words. Loving words. Eliyahu. And I think we could extend this to any person in power, any conversation with anybody. It's not effective to make an earthquake, to make a fire, to make a storm. How do you speak to people that aren't doing the right thing? You don't make droughts. You don't make fire. You come with love. You come with soft words. You come with a still, thin voice. You come with affection. And that's how you reach the people. Eliyahu, you overreacted. You went too far, says the Malbim. You went too far, that firestorm. No! Come with a still, thin voice. Come with love. And that's how you approach people who are slipping, who are not acting the proper way. Source number 7. And this next source really highlights the detrimental effect when we come too hard. Tana Rabbanan. Gemara Sota Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. La'olam tie adam smol doche v'yamin mekarevis. A beautiful, beautiful Torah. A person should always push with the left and embrace with the right. The left hand always symbolic of a weaker hand, and the right is the stronger hand. Push with the left, embrace with the right. The proper balance. A little push, but with bring them back with love. Lo kelisha shedachavu legechazi b'shtei yadav. Not like Elisha who pushed his attendant Gechazi with two hands. That's not the right way to do it. Lo ki yashu ben prachya shedachavu la'acha mitamida b'shtei yadav. Who many say is the man whose holiday is coming up. Lo ki yashu ben prachya pushed aside his student. What happened with Elisha? What happened? Naaman was the commander of the king of Aram, and he contracted tzaras. He had tzaras. He was told, one of the maidservants that he captured, it got through to him, that Elisha, the prophet, could cure him of his leprosy, of his tzaras. He finally goes to Elisha and says, what do I do? I have tzaras. This is Naaman, the king, the general of the king Aram. What does he do? He says, go and bathe in the Jordan 7 times. 7 times, go and bathe in the Jordan, and you'll become cleansed. So initially, Naaman is, seriously? I came all the way to tell me to go in the Jordan River? I have great rivers where I'm from. Why do I have to go here? And he's all upset and frustrated and irritated. He says, what do I? But his attendants convince him, just go in the river. He goes in the river, he's cured of his tzaras. It worked wonders. He's so happy. Wow! The Lord, the God is real. He has like a spiritual revelation. He goes to Elisha, what does he say? I need to reward you. I need to compensate you heavily. Let me give you money after money. Let me reward you. You're amazing. Elisha does what? Refuses. No way. I don't want to accept a penny. Like Avram with Stone. I don't want to accept any money. And that's the end of the story. Naaman goes away. But it's not the end of the story. His attendant, Gehazi, was a little greedy. He runs after Naaman, and he makes up this whole story. He says, oh, by the way, you know, I know we talked about not taking any money, but after my master spoke, these two disciples, these two prophets came, and they're poor, so, you know, maybe we can give them a little bit of money. And Naaman, who's like in the spiritual fever, you could have told him anything. He says, sure. And he gives a lot of money to Gehazi. Gehazi gets the money, and he thinks he literally just robbed the bank. Elisha, of course, the prophet, says, what are you doing? Where were you? Naaman says, I know what you're talking about. I wasn't anywhere. He's like, where were you? Where were you? And now, source number 8, what does he say? Vayomer lav. Was my heart not with you as the man got off his chariot to greet you? Meaning, I know where you were. I know what you just did, Gehazi. Was it the time to take the money? And then with that money to purchase all these amenities, the clothes and olives and vineyards. You're going to get tzaras and your children forever. Whoa. And he left. Gehazi left Elisha as a leper like snow. What's Chazal telling us? Elisha was way too harsh. Gehazi made a mistake. He was way too harsh. He was harsh with the punishment, with the encounter. He pushed him with two hands. And what happens to Gehazi? He completely goes off the deep end. At that point, it was at the point of no return. He spiraled out of control following this encounter. And Chazal is being critical of Elisha. You took it with two hands, too harif, too harsh, too much. And Gehazi went off the path. When we need a rebuke, a gentle with the weak hand, but then bring them in with the hug, with the love, with the brace, with the affection. If it's two hands, you have a Gehazi, who the Gemara tells us didn't in the end even inherit the world to come. One of the few. Because he kept going worse and worse, out of control. To be so careful, because our harshness, our rebuke, could literally lead a person off the deep end. And we all know stories. It could lead a person off the deep end. When you say it with the proper balance, a little gentle push, but I love you so much. I bring you in. I literally bring you forth. I'm embracing you. I love you. And that's the perfect balance. I want to conclude with one final story. I saw this in with Rav Y.Y. Jacobson. A great story, of course, about the Rebbe. We got to hear him at Keter Torah at a nice event just a few months ago. Tells a story about Rabbi Beryl Baumgarten. He was a mechanech in Brooklyn. And every single Shabbos, he would bring his Talmidim and they had a study session. I guess they would learn, review for the week. And there was always this one student that would come in and he smelled like cigarettes. He knew, and this was Shabbos. He knew that he was smoking. He knew. It was a saying, and he knew. So he wrote to the Rebbe and said, his great Rebbe, the great master, what do I do with this guy? What do I do? So what am I supposed to do? Should I kick him out of the yeshiva? He's clearly smoking on Shabbos. Maybe he'll have a detrimental effect on the other Talmidim. I don't know what to do. So Rav Baumgarten asked the Rebbe, what do I do with this student? The Rebbe answered, see Avos de Rav Nosson, chapter 12. What? That was it. See Avos de Rav Nosson, Perek Yud Beis. That's the answer. So Rav Jacobson, talking about the story, Rav Jacobson was very curious. Yes, he was there. That's what the Rebbe wrote. See Avos de Rav Nosson. Avos de Rav Nosson is an addendum to Perkei Avos. Beautiful insights. What is happening in the 12th Perek? Talks about Aharon HaKohen, the great Aharon HaKohen. He was the first master of the Baalei Tshuva movement. He was the one that was able to bring people back to the faith. And in Aharon's time, if you think about it, it was a much harder job. At that time, full revelation of Hashem. You saw Hashem in His full glory with miracles and it was gevaldik. If you didn't listen to Hashem at that time, you were a real nudnik. It wasn't like Hester upon him. Hashem in His full glory. You're not listening to God then, you're not doing a good thing. The generations go on, and more concealment gets a little harder. So what's going on? What did Aharon do? These were the real low of low, the low of society. They saw miracles, they were in the midbar, they had it all. And they still slipped. What did Aharon do? Very simple. He loved them, says Avosur of Nassim. He showed them respect. He showed them warmth. He showed them care. He showed them, you have dignity. You matter. He befriended them. And what happened, says Avosur of Nassim, the next day, the guy would say, before he'd sin, wait a second. The holy Kohen Gadol thinks, I'm meaningful. I matter. I'm a respectable person. If I do this action, how could I face him the next day? How could I look him in the eye? I'm too ashamed. I'm too embarrassed. He holds me in such high esteem. I have to live up to that expectations. I can't face him the next day. I can't deceive him. I can't dupe him. This is Aharon. And what would happen? The sinners would stop sinning. It worked wonders. It worked magic. That was the response the Rebbe gave him. And Rav Y.Y. says, adding his own commentary, what was the Rebbe telling Rabbi Beryl Baumgarten to do about the student? What was his advice? Love him to pieces. Embrace him with every fiber of your being. Open your heart to him. Cherish him. And shower him with warmth and affection. Appreciate him. Respect him. And let him feel that you really care for him. See in him or in her that which he or she may not be able to see in themselves at the moment. View him as a great human being. And you know what? He will become just that. That was the advice of the Rebbe. That was the advice. Love him. And love him even more. And when you demonstrate that love and respect and appreciation, he'll grow into it. He'll live up to it. He'll build himself up on that image. He'll change. So of course, certain times in those difficult conversations we have to have with people, we have to have them. We have to shower them with love, respect, admiration, and dignity. So to conclude, to the practical note, sometimes in our lives, we have a wide range here. Sometimes in our lives, we encounter people that might not be doing proper things. It could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be an employee, it could be somebody we know. And it's that tough idea, what do we do? So it might be obvious, but it's important to state, Rav, in the great Sefer Olam Amidos of Kestenbaum, it needs to be stated, number one, the prerequisite, never rebuke when we're angry. That's for starters. Does anybody remember the last time when we were angry, when we rebuked somebody, how that turned out? Obviously not well. Had the opposite detrimental effect. So never rebuke when we're angry. The person will only get defensive, combative, and want to push you away. That's for starters. Worth saying. But more than that, when we see somebody in a difficult spot, our first reaction has to be, I need to love them. I need to care about them. I need to have their best interests in mind. I need to be thinking, I love them so much. And if I don't have those feelings, I have to develop those feelings. I have to internalize those feelings. I have to work on it and really develop it. And then, and only then, can we approach the person and explain in a calm, dignified, private manner how much we care about them, how much we love them, how much we want to see that they could take themselves or herself to a different place, to a different area in life. And Amir Tashem, that's a legacy of Yaakov Avinu, Achai, my brothers. Because if we approach the people with love, respect, dignity, and affection, they're going to be willing to listen. They're going to realize we have their best interests in mind. Obviously, it has to be sincere and genuine. And Amir Tashem, we'll see tremendous growth in the person. We'll see tremendous growth in ourselves that we displayed and developed this Avos Yisrael. And then everybody around us in these difficult situations, everybody will grow. Everybody will benefit. Everybody will become a much more elevated and refined individual. And Shabbat Shalom to all.